Good morning. Welcome to the session Food and Flavor 2023 to 2024 Directional Dining and Drinking Trends. Leanne Schwarzkopf is here. She is a consultant, industry consultant with expertise in licensing strategy and category research. She will talk about the importance of following flavor and cuisine trends for the housewares industry as it's evolved today. So please welcome Leanne.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you for being here, everyone. It's a small but mighty group. Excited to share some of the information we have with you. I want to apologize in advance. I'm getting over a cold, not COVID. Tested negative twice, but if I need to take a break and drink some water or cough, please excuse me. Thank you so much for being here. Today we're going to talk about, where am I pointing this? Up here? Sorry, I should have tried that before. I can just use that. Okay, awesome. This one, okay. So today we're gonna talk a little bit about trends in consumer forecasts and a little bit about what's going on generally, and then we're going to talk about how people are thinking about combating some of the emotional things that have been going on in their life, and really how food and flavor help you satisfy that urge for adventure that we're finding consumers want. We'll look at some top cuisines and flavors that are on the horizon. We'll talk about cooking from home and how to make everyday meals a little more special and build on confidence gained during the pandemic. My approach to this is kind of a here's what, so what, now what, and the here's what and so what will kind of be blended in this presentation just because I think it's great to lay a foundation. But the now what is really what will probably be most meaningful to people in the housewares industry. So first we're gonna pause on the overall consumer picture. As you may have heard if you listened to the Numerator presentation before, I mean, inflation is top of mind, no matter where you go, whether it's trade journals or Bloomberg, everyone's talking about inflation and what's happening there. I mean, the price of eggs being more than a pound of hamburger is something that you can't get away from. And you know, what does that do to people when they're trying to figure out how to cook in their home and entertain with their friends? We're looking at, my group likes to look very broadly because we think the big ideas come from the periphery. So we're looking at what's happening in restaurants, what's happening in food and kitchens. We're looking at just what's happening in social media and trying to connect the dots, and that's what we'll be talking about here today. So restaurant prices are going up, which is another indicator of why people might want to cook at home. And you really, you know, you can't dispute that you can save money by cooking at home. So people are looking at that more and more. And they acquired all these skills during the pandemic. And now we want to figure out how to help them continue to grow and use those skills and satisfy some of their needs for interacting with their families, interacting with friends, and doing more to celebrate life. One of the things we've been noticing is that people are really looking to shop for authentic flavors on a budget. Just because they're in COVID lockdown and they're not able to get out doesn't mean they want to be bored with what they're doing. They're, you know, while everybody loves mac and cheese and it's a great comfort food, how do we amp it up? How do we do something a little bit more? So we're finding that no matter where we look, there's a quest for flavor, there's a quest for variety, there's a quest for fusion going on in the marketplace. And this is particularly strong with certain generations, which we'll talk about in a minute. When we looked at social media and, you know, what kind of content people are looking for, always we're finding, how do I make something special? How do I make something interesting? How do I make something that my family will enjoy? But at the same time, they're looking for affordable. So affordability is something that will continue to play a role here. Love this quote here. In 2023, we'll see new food trends emerge that are conducive to budget meals, which will prioritize common pantry and fridge staples. So taking advantage of what you have in your pantry, is going to continue to be important. That doesn't mean that you don't want to entertain, because you do. You want to have more parties, you want to have larger parties. We're seeing specialized theme parties percolating through the roof. Participatory, I love to do this. It's maybe a lazy thing to do, but you invite your friends over and hey, you're making the profiteroles and you're making this and I'm making this. And everybody's having fun around the idea of participating and trying new cuisines. And of course, we can't ignore Pinterest and Instagram, and everybody's looking at how can they publicize and share with their friends and family what they're seeing. I love some of these stats here that we came out on the Pinterest predicts analysis. You know, birthday party ideas are going through the roof. Golden anniversary parties up 370%. We're going to see some other statistics later on that talk about that quest for adventure, that quest for something unusual and something different. The biggest theme I want to talk about today, though, actually was discussed a little bit by the gentleman who spoke before me at Numerator, and he talked about people are cocooning, they're still cocooning, they invested in their homes, they invested in their yards, they invested in their things, but there's still this pent-up desire to travel. So this lust for adventure while staring at your pantry shelves is something that we want to explore today. You've got a consumer psyche where people want to travel. We've seen statistics that 74% of people travel for the cuisine. So how do you satisfy that with what you can do at home? If they can't travel, they're reading, they're lurking, and they're wanting to try new things. The 74% of people who travel did so for the food. I mean, 3 in 4 Americans went for food. They're looking at healthy and speedy cooking, but look at the number compared to the travel. And then when you look at what kind of equipment they're looking for, you know, walks are right up there with things that are very mainstream, and then where they want to go, Italy, France, Spain, Japan, testing out new cuisines. Love this quote, the most popular tourist attraction of the world today is food. And you can see this. If next time you're in London, I encourage you to go to walks.com. Look at their foodie tours. And the woman who runs that up, her name is Anne. She used to work for the BBC, and she is amazing. Gives you all kinds of great history, gives you suggestions, and I think that's what people are looking for. And I think this video may or may not work here. We'll try it.
Of beetroot, Strathton blue cheese, red apples, and English honey. And Strathton blue cheese comes from Scotland. You can go and buy it in Neil's yard if you want to. It's Froland sourdough bread. It's Mrs. Montgomery's cheddar, different sorts of onions and garlic and such like, toasted. And they are wonderful. And that's probably enough to make you incredibly hungry. And can't wait to rush off and eat. Thank you very much for coming.
So Anne's specialty is giving you the history of the location. The first time I went with her, we're walking. Stop, turn here. This is the very first cheese market in all of Europe. Or here's where Winston Churchill shopped. Here's what the three favorite cheeses were. And then you become immersed in the culture, and it's just a lot of fun. So if you go to London, say hi to Anne for me. She's become a great friend over the years. When people are looking for these food adventures, they're looking for something unique, something global, something that's gonna stand out. And, you know, familiar flavors, but they wanna push the envelope is something we're finding. They're craving adventure, they're eager to learn. The whole culinary tourism, it's not just about tasting the food, it's about preparing the food. So if almost any place you go, you can find a, how do I take a class in this? How do I take a class in that? I took a class in Paris on making macarons. It was so much fun. Walked away with more than I could eat in 3 days, but it was a hoot. You see this playing out in the marketplace in a lot of different ways. So, you know, the Specialty Food Association just put forth some new research, and they're talking about global taste infiltrating what's happening in the marketplace, and you really see it if you take a look at their report. But even at the most recent specialty food show, this last in January, you see pavilions around different states and the cuisines that are there. You've got the Japanese pavilion, Canadian, the French, Italian, Indian, the European Union, Greece, Spain, Thailand, Morocco, Indonesian. So about 20% of the floor is dedicated to those international pavilions. And then in amongst all that gray area, you also have great food coming from different African nations and other Asian nations and other areas in the world. So we're really seeing a nice infusion of culture and flavor. If you haven't followed this, or I found this this book or this Instagram feed, I encourage you to do. It's a wonderful find. It's just every day there's some new little factoid, and I think it demonstrates, you know, with excuse me, with 185,000 followers, the people are looking for these kinds of interesting facts and fun things to make their stories, the stories they're telling over the table. And I love even the name, the Food Adventurer's Guide. It brings it home, and I think it validates that what you're looking to do is something that, you know, is going to bring you joy. People want to learn about ingredients. They want to learn about the complexity of flavors. They're looking for, you know, what is the difference between chilies in this market or that market, and how do I distinguish or how do I incorporate those into my cooking? How is it brought into different ingredients that you can buy in the grocery store or incorporate into your recipes? If you don't follow this guy, you need to. He's one of my heroes in this industry, and he's always got some great insights on what's happening. But some of the things I liked what he's talking about here is the whole idea of, we talked a little bit about people yearning for these different cuisines. We'll get into restaurants next, but he talks about in the home and housewares and CPG industries, think about chef-crafted restaurant style. How do I bring that experience into the home? And then the second thing he talks about is the, we'll talk about the word next over in a couple more slides, but given the inflationary pressures we have, people are not throwing out their leftovers. They're bringing them home. They might be supplementing them because you bring home this delicious main meal, but you want to put some side dishes with things you have in your pantry, or the other way around. You've got things, you brought home some leftovers and you want to supplement it. I do that all the time. I'll make a great curry and then I'll stop and get samosas someplace else, and that kind of rounds out the meal. But if you're not following Mike, you should. So, you know, as I mentioned, he talks about, and we've been seeing this a lot of places, this whole hybrid approach. You bring in your main or sides from restaurant, you bring the other from home, and together it tells the whole story. And that's where that whole idea of next over comes in. And you can also see this with the people that do the food preps on, like Sunday food prep, and it's supposed to feed your family for the whole week. So there's a lot of great stuff happening there. The idea of next over is not new, but it saves you time, it saves you money, and it's just wicked convenient. So I think that's one of the reasons it's resonating with people. We talked a little bit about restaurants, and if you follow people like Open Table or Grubhub, patterns are emerging. So you see here in Open Table, they talk about the new restaurants that are coming on the different scenes, and you've got a Palestinian American in Kansas City who's rethinking what we all know about hummus, or you've got a chef from Guyana who's traveled through the Caribbean and bringing different flavor influences to where he is in Texas. So I think that whole idea of, some people call it a third culture, some people call it, you know, different kinds of things, but we'll talk about how all these fusions are really becoming important. And I promise I'm gonna get into what this means to you in the audience, but I'm setting that here's what, so what stage. Top craves that people are looking for: Chinese food, Mexican food, Thai food. When you do searches on what are they looking for, you see flavors, flavors, flavors. Different organizations, news organizations, or research institutes talk about spicy and sweet infusion experiences, local culture. bringing in the sriracha, the Southeast Asian cuisines, all of these things, again, are painting that story that you can't ignore global cuisines. Here we've got, again, Open Table talking about the biggest searches, Korean, hibachi, Brazilian steakhouses, saw a lift in diners. And the National Restaurant Association says people are eager to return to that sense of community where they want to socialize. So again, bringing that experience home is going to be critical going forward. Spoonshot also talks about spices and different kinds of food that you want to incorporate. And the whole idea of revenge dining. And even though people are going out more, they're bringing home those leftovers and they're looking for unique cuisine, as we mentioned. Here's Grubhub's top overall requests. Again, you've got burritos, pad thai, quesadillas, sushi, tikka masala, margaritas, sake, pina coladas. This is reminding you that the globally influenced flavors and cuisines are rising to the front. And I thought this on the side was kind of interesting. Beer moved to the top, followed by margaritas, both to go with the burritos, and the red wine kind of dropped off the top list. I thought that was interesting. Cuisine, Australian cuisine, up 531%. I mean, who knew? There's a big wide world out there, lots of great things to look at. And it's not just Asian, you have to think about the different Asian influences and the different Asian cultures, or different parts of the region. So these are coming from Grubhub and Food Service Director. Uber Eats, top trending surprise combos. The delivery combos here, cheeseburger and onions, I mean, there's not a big surprise on that. But again, it just informs what people are eating with different things. So as you create an assortment of housewares and home products, you know what to include in there. Top desserts, tiramisu, baklava. People are looking for things to supplement from the restaurant that they might not make at home, but this could indicate that they're making an Italian meal, they're making a Greek meal, and they want to layer this in. So what do you need to do to support those efforts? Peppers and heat. Everywhere you go, that's a big topic. So people like Spoonshot and others are tracking which of the heat maps are important, not only literally but figuratively. When you can see what part of the region, so if you're doing any marketing, you can tailor it to that audience. You can see where it appears in different product. And Carrie is actually even talking about the life cycle of these things, and we'll see how they're tracking food and flavors and what's mainstream, what's coming up and coming, and what to be on the lookout for. So we're going to dive into that here in a moment. But takeaway here that spice levels are complex, and we really want to do things to break up the monotony, and I think that those are really important. People are bored with plain old ordinary meat. I'm from Ethiopia. I decided to try something new with my smoked meat and add an Ethiopian flavor to it. The joy of blasphemous fusion food. I mean, there's articles written everywhere. And I think one of the things that I want to encourage everybody to do, and if you've heard me speak before, you know that this is kind of my pet peeve, is you can't look at a single data point. You have to look at the surround, connect the dots, and tell the story. 76% of consumers are excited about food and beverage. They want to move forward. They want to find new things to do. So we saw in 2022, bitter was gaining traction. Veganism was expanding, barbecue and smoke. But Symrise, one of the big flavor houses, is saying, now we're going to see a little more savory. We're going to see umami. We want to look at how low alcohol and no alcohol with maybe different infusions with botanicals fits in. The whole multi-layered, again, we're talking about fusion and different kinds of things, regional, global, hyper-regionality, which we talked about. It's beyond Asian, it's Cambodian, it's Thai, it's et cetera. all the generations are interested in flavor, especially if you look at Gen Z and millennials, the people who are buying new, they're establishing households that have the biggest wanderlust. The number two thing that they're looking at is flavor for Gen Z, and same thing for the millennials. So you can't really afford to miss it. Well, one of the things we did is we took a look, now we're gonna get into the flavors a little more. So we took a look at three of the big houses, so Symrise, Bell, and Carey. And what are the common themes? The whole idea of luxury, nostalgia, some people call it nostalgia because it's a different flair on old cuisine. But you see that whole indulgence, mashups, familiar but new, permeating through everything. And then you also see the multicultural mashup, the fusions and flavor pairing. So think about nostalgia and mashups is really kind of the sweet spot here. So Data Central's talking about flavors that are going to be everywhere, and you can see the list, but there's lots of really interesting things going on here. Ranch water, mushrooms, bria, maple, yuzu, maconda, and then things that are coming down the road with, cherry blossoms and cannabis. Cannabis is showing up in a lot of different places too. The savory granola, pickled strawberries. I mean, who would have thought pickled strawberries would be something to watch? But Data Central says, keep it on your radar, look for it. Carrie, who does an analysis every year, talks about the up-and-coming cuisine. So mainstream right now is Southern Italian, Chinese, Mexican, Tex-Mex, and so you should know that those are gonna be everywhere. You can't ignore those consumers. But up-and-coming are things like Mongolian, Belgian, Korean, Malaysian, Caribbean, Bavarian, Irish, Danish. And then there's things that are emerging. The Vietnamese, Norwegian, Jamaican, a whole list of things there. So what are the things that you think of when you think of those kind of cuisines? And then what we tried to do here on the top, the little chart on the top, is there's things that are Asian-rooted, Latin-influenced, and African, because we're trying to, again identify the patterns and see where you can get the most ROI on your efforts. So this is cuisine type. We're also looking at savory taste charts. So same format here, it's like what's mainstream, tomato, garlic, jalapeno, onion, but up and coming are, kimchi, the pesto, different kinds of barbecue, like the North Carolina barbecue as opposed to Kansas or Texas barbecue, the herbs de Provence, miso, more Szechuan coming in, and then a little bit farther down, it's like, how do you make sloppy joes more interesting? What's happening with apple and soy sauce? So lots of things to be thinking about going forward, but I really encourage you to look at Carrie's flavor charts. They also look at salty snacks and what's going on there. So you've got mainstream again, cheddar cheese. I mean, who hasn't seen cheddar cheese and, in your popcorn? It's just going gangbusters, all the flavored popcorn. And, but up and coming are the candy infusions and the caramelized onion birthday cake. These things are becoming more and more mainstream, as you'll have seen if you walk through your grocery market. Love the idea of sweet and salty, that fusion there. And then dealing with sweets. You've got your mainstream, milk chocolate and strawberry and that, but up and coming are a little more rich, a little more indulgent flavors. S'mores just isn't going away. If you heard my talk last year, s'mores, and every iteration you can think of, and it needs a heck of a lot of equipment. There were something like 600,000 searches for how to make a s'mores charcuterie board, or what equipment can I buy to make my s'mores party more interesting. So again, think through what do you need to support these flavor profile things. Firmenich is saying, dragon fruit, big thing to look for next year. National Restaurant Association, Southeast Asian, Caribbean, and South American. So again, lots of multicultural, lots of global influence. Latin American street food is showing up in a lot of different ways in CPG. And then you've got companies like McCormick talking about, you know, the different things that they're seeing coming down the pike, as well as, you know, places like Dawn Food. So everybody's talking about food and flavor and the junction of what's going on. Retailers are getting in the game too. I mean, most of the retailers are now coming up with their predictions and what we're seeing. And when you've got Whole Foods saying, you know, we're kicking up the flavor, we're kicking up the energy, it's something to pay attention to. How can you support those efforts at retail? Fermentation is something that Whole Foods is watching, and there's unique flavors with that. Remember, we talked about kimchi coming up, so that all kind of cycles back. IFT is also talking about fermented. And then we take a look at the media and, you know, what are the recipes people are looking for? And some of the most heavily searched recipes for, like, even the New York Times have different cuisines represented. So you've got the Thai, you've got the sticky rice, and you've got the San Francisco-styled Vietnamese food. So it's not just pure Vietnamese, it's how do you make it a San Francisco thing. With change comes opportunity. So as these shifts are happening and people are looking for more flavor, they're looking for more adventure, this is an opportunity for those of us in the home and housewares industry, and whether you're a retailer, a manufacturer, or in content development, to be a mentor. How do you provide assurance, content, how-to, equipment, and confidence? So you can partner with YouTube celebrities or be your own YouTube celebrity and talk about how to do things. You can offer, here's the essential equipment that you need to get something done. Anywhere you look, there's lists of here's the top influencers in this and that, and you can find the people that fit with what you're doing. I love this example. This is in the giftware industry, but they are picking up on it. This is a company, a British company called Silver Crane, and they've started a whole new division called Kit and Boodle, where there's a tin that has everything you need to make Thai street food. How fun would that be to partner with someone that's making the cooking equipment, and then with that you have a gift with purchase or a coupon. And these people are amazing. The retailer is the mentor, and it's like it's becoming a central focus of where you learn. I love this. Sur La Table cooks a Crocus Hill in my hometown, exploring Korean barbecue, classes on all of this. But even looking at this headline in their email campaign, no passport, no problem. Explore your culinary journeys here. I thought that is just beautiful. Travel the world from the kitchen near you. No passport required. That's just a beautiful message. It resonates with all these people that are looking for different flavors. Big retailers, small retailers, so Cooks of Crocus Hill just got a couple of stores in the Twin Cities, you've got Marcel's, but then you also have companies like Sur La Table, excuse me, Morocco, Italian, French, Indian, stuffed pasta, all different kinds of cuisines where they can bring you, it's a date night, it's a take it by yourself, take the class by yourself, take it with your friend, take it for a special occasion. Or you need this equipment to do this at home. I mean, how perfect is that? One of the things we're looking at is almost every source we've read talks about various African cuisines coming to the forefront. So we're tracking that. So we've got Nigeria, Ethiopia, the Ivory Coast, digging deeper into, you know, some of what's happening there as far as the restaurant scene. What is that? He said even Mexican food is getting a Nigerian twist in Sacramento. They've got a chef that's doing some fun things there. Specialized housewares. If you're going to be cooking Moroccan food, you probably should have the proper equipment. So again, it's a nice way to bring the home and housewares industry to it. And building on that, if I'm going to have the proper equipment to prepare it, I should have a tablescape that matches it. I should have some colors that reinforce the theme I'm trying to do, so you can create that whole experience at home. Open Table says everyone is craving Latin cuisine. I saw some data, and I don't think it's in this presentation, I think it's in another, that if you had one cuisine you could have for the rest of your life, what would it be? And Latin cuisine was at top of the list, Mexican food. Everybody said, if I can only have one cuisine the rest of my life. I'm like, wow. That was something like 40% of the population. It was a huge number. But craving Latin and Hispanic foods, different tools and gadgets, et cetera. And then we think about, okay, now you have all of this, you know, I talked about third culture cuisine, and that's the idea of blending different things, taking fusion kind of to the next level. But some people call it chaos cooking, diaspora cooking, mosaic cooking. Everybody calls it a little different, but it's all the same thing. It's blending different things, whether it's a region or a cuisine or a flavor, and how do you make it, how do you make it special and interesting? Different forms. You've got Western desserts recalibrated with an Asian flair. You've got Mom's Recipe brought into a new company. So Joyce Chen talking to Italian immigrants about how to do dumpling ravioli. I mean, really fun things. Texas barbecue with the Japanese flair. People are calling it different things, fantastic fusions, thinking ahead into 2 or 3 years, they're saying this is going to continue. So again, you can't afford to ignore this. Japanese seems to be a really big thing as a foundational element. A couple of years ago, I worked with Michelle Lamb from the Trend Curve, and we were talking about the Japandi movement in home and home decor, and then we started to see it more and more in food, so we wrote a couple of blog posts. But just in January, we put this together in Japanese style and Italian. It seems to be coming along as a big thing. Korean fusions, we're seeing Korean with Scandinavian, with Mexican and Italian. We're seeing mashups, kimchi carbonara. Other mashups, different kinds of sides, different kinds of food that go with different things. And they need specialized housewares. So you've got, if you're cooking for, you've got a Thai theme, what food prep materials do you need? So here's a Forbes article talking about specialized housewares for your Thailand thing. You've got, Latin, you've got Loisa's home cooking tools that are required. You've got Lunar New Year, which we all know has become very big. How do you capitalize on Lunar New Year with different home and housewares items? Looking at different bloggers, these are the essential tools for a Mexican kitchen. And there's lists that continue to go on, and they're the same thing. So you should be thinking through, what does my assortment say? How do I offer a solution to the consumer? Same thing with Asian. No matter what cuisine you're looking for, you can find, here are the essentials. Want to touch briefly on nutrition. Again, thinking flavor and cuisine, there are people that are also interested in how do I take better care of myself. So Carrie also did a study here and talked about what do people care about. So think about, in addition to the flavor, what can I do with up and coming nutritional things. The gut health continues to be important, helping inflammation. These are things, how do you provide tools and techniques for people that are concerned about that? Beverages, we've talked about alcohol, non-alcohol. What tools and equipment do you need? There's evidence of kidulting. That is really a fun thing to be watching in this environment. So whether you're speaking to an alcohol consumer or a non-alcohol consumer, there's still a home bar, there's still the idea of you want the equipment, you want the tools, you want the glassware that's pretty and distinctive, you want the accessories that are fun. And how do you set up a bar cart? In Atlanta Market, a couple months ago, I was stunned at how many bar carts there were. At Ambiente, stunned by how many bar accessories there were. There's just a boatload going on there. Carrie, of course, does a beverage chart on what's happening with dairy and hot, and you can see emerging flavors coming there. Again, are very seasonal, or very very spice and flavor driven. We expect to see a lot more cocktail mashups, so this whole idea of blending flavor and cuisine across cultures is happening here as well. You see it with cocktails matching into food, and how do you create that whole story, both in restaurants and then how to replicate that at home. Globetrotting while sipping, how do you do the wine tasting experience at home? People are looking for things like that. Different kinds of boozy trends. And we really live in an age of abundance where we can look at social media, we can look at different places to help us identify what are the top ones. So use those tools that are available. We've all heard of Dry January. It's becoming a much bigger thing than that. I did read somewhere that people who are giving up booze are going to pot, so I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. But non-alcoholic beverages have come a long way, and as we said, everybody's looking for an option. Everybody wants to be special. So whether you're putting booze in these drinks or not, it's got to look great. Look at these numbers. Non-alcoholic drinks up 220%, mocktails up 75%, cocktail garnishes 225%, but the cocktail presentation up 555% on Pinterest. That is freaking astonishing. And that speaks to what the housewares industry can do. Looking for these mashups, as we said, Uber delivery and Drizzly talking about adding non-alcoholic partners, the no booze boom. It's not going away. Dry January is a lifestyle chart or lifestyle thing. Sober curiosity was really big at the fancy food show. Everything from wines to, like I said, botanicals, all kinds of things going on. Talked about here, this is the water and cold beverage taste chart from Kerry. Here's where we saw the kind of the kidult things just soaring with root beer and pink lemonade and bubblegum and sour cherry. How fun are those if you think about how to incorporate flavor and taste into what you're doing. Here we've got my friend Mike again talking about different trends in drinking. We've got the nostalgia, pairings with McRibs with a $1,000 bottle of whiskey. I mean, people are looking for just strange things to keep life interesting. It's not just, though, about food and food prep. It's also things like, how do I think about making my home environments. I've got here, you got Williams-Sonoma doing a diffuser that reminds me of the Amalfi Coast. And I talked to Michelle Lamb, who specializes in home products and things like that. I said, how do you incorporate this whole idea of a spicy, bold flavors into other home products? And she gave me a few things to share with y'all today. So the whole idea about bold spice, bold cuisine, bold flavor, translates into bold pattern. So you might want to be doing interesting colors and design. So here's a few examples of that she asked me to share with you all. I think those are beautiful. And then bold forms, it can be, you know, something that, you know, catches your eye when you walk into a room or look at a table. But I love some of these shapes. I think they tell a really nice story. And then the bold color, which again you can use to reinforce if you're doing a Mexican theme, you pick colors that resonate there. If you're doing a Moroccan thing, maybe they're a little deeper and, you know, and spicier tones. But you've got a whole range of color options you can do. And there you go. Just wanted to, you know, the takeaways are pay attention. Think about how it applies to your category. Think about how you can provide content. And think broadly. Don't just look at one source. Look at a lot of different sources. So I knew I threw a lot at you, but I'm watching the clock, and I'm going to run out of time here. So I wanted to end on time so you could continue with your day.
Thank you, Leanne. Does anyone have any questions? So, right here.
I was wondering if you've seen anything in child feeding specifically.
I'm sorry?
Any child feeding trends that you've noticed?
I still can't hear you.
Child feeding? Like kids? Feeding for kids?
I from what I've seen, people are trying to introduce different flavors and different things earlier. So their kids' palates are a little broader. It could be as simple as introducing a flavored cottage cheese or something like that, which I've just seen brought to market in the last couple of weeks, to introducing different cuisines. It's like you might be bringing in different spice blends at an earlier age. Of course, you're not going to be feeding jalapenos to 1 year olds, but introducing those things earlier and a wider range of food products is definitely on the upswing.
I have a question. We're at the Houseware Show, and there's a lot of things happening in the marketplace at the same time. But I think most people realize that changes in eating equal changes in housewares. I was kind of interested in your comments about theme parties, where if you're going to have Thai food, you may want to have certain kinds of things. You may have certain kinds of tableware and servingware. And that may start you on thinking about new decor and things like that. These things are all connected. But sometimes it's a little overwhelming trying to figure out exactly how to make the connections. And some of the things you said about social media made me think that perhaps we're entering a new age where product development and the desire to follow trends also has to have a social media component. In other words, to connect these, that housewares, or do you think housewares producers are going to have to think more clearly and have plans in place to make the connections between these new products, particularly if they're serving new cuisines and such, and what people can do with them, and even recommend theme parties, even like that. It seems like there's a big opportunity, but it takes a little bit more effort.
Yeah, I definitely think that you have to go, it's not even the extra mile, it's the expected mile now, by providing content and uses for different products. What we really can't afford is to have people buy something and then say, oh, this was a lousy experience, and the next time a trend comes along, they're like, I bought that last time and it's sitting on my counter, I've never used it, there's 400 of them sitting at the Goodwill. Give them a reason to come back, give them a reason to try something new, whether it's recipes or a sense of community. We did some proprietary research that is actually being presented this afternoon. and people are looking for that. I mean, it scored much higher than it ever has in the past. It's like, how do I use this stuff? How do I have that great experience? How do I, maybe it's a checklist even. It's like, here's, if you want to make that s'mores charcuterie tray, it's like, you need these things, you need this equipment, you need these products. And go at it. And you could do it on your own social media. You can find someone that kind of resonates with the audience you're going after. There's lots of ways to do it. But I think it's the cost of entry. It's table stakes, as they say now. It's not something that's nice to do. It's you must do it, especially as you're looking to attract younger audiences.
If a supermarket has 50 recipes for something that they're introducing, why shouldn't somebody who is making, say, a paella pan, and give them 50 different kinds of paella, keeps them busy and makes your product work for them.
Yeah, I mean, so when you're registered, often we put a thing in the box saying, register your thing and we'll be in touch with you. Give them content, have them opt in, let them have a great experience.
Leanne, I'm also thinking that there are implications for storage, for like food storage, pantry storage. Are you seeing those connections from not only the different ingredients and the myriad of things like spices and how are you going to keep all that fresh, to also your next overs concept?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Food storage, food prep thing I saw, really wonderful. I didn't put it up here just because I knew I was going to run out of time. But I saw some great product in Germany this last month with, you know, a dicing station that I could do this and this, and you had little drawers and you pull it out, and then all you need to do is put a lid on, and everything was there and done and ready for me for the whole week. And I think those things are important. I think something to bring home, you know, bring home your leftovers. I mean, you have to be careful. You can't, I mean, there are food safety things. You know, you can't let your chicken sit in, you know, your leftover chicken sit in the refrigerator for 3 weeks and think you're going to do something with it. But yeah, I mean, who hasn't come home with, you know, your takeaway boxes and you open the refrigerator door and it's like, whoa, there's more garlic in here than I ever expected. So finding solutions like that is another great opportunity.
Do we have any other questions? Well, thank you for attending, and thank you again, Leanne.
Thank you. We're 10 seconds over. We're on time.